Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TY Media Week program is funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee and has been devised by Learning Waves in association with LMFM. LMFM.
You're listening to the TY Takeover on LMFM.
If you have any songs or requests that you'd like to give to us,
WhatsApp or text us on 086 1800 658.
Hello everyone, my name is Anya and welcome to TY Takeover on LMFM. Coming up, we will have some exciting interviews, some super music, and at the top of the hour we will have your news bulletin.
Sophie here. Anya and I also discuss the challenges us young people face in school, including the juggling of social life with school.
This is the TY Takeover on LMFM. Hey!
LMFM. Hello everyone. My name is Sophie Carr and I'm a TY student from the Bush. I'll be chatting to Cara Byrne first, who is a member of the Irish Association for Counselling and Psychotherapy. She uses a unique method of hiking therapy, which is where therapy sessions take place outdoors. This actually helps boost endorphins, which are feel-good hormones, and exposure to natural light has been proven to increase levels of improved mood and self-esteem. She has huge passion for her job and a lot of experience working with us young people and the challenges we face at school. Here is her on Instagram giving us one tip for tricky emotions.
If you're feeling unmotivated or procrastination is kind of stopping you from doing things or making you do things you shouldn't be doing, then try some Wim Hof or breath of fire breathing, which I won't show you here because it takes quite a bit of practice, but that increases your norepinephrine, which makes you more focused and makes it easier for you to work.
Cara, it's an absolute honour to have you on the show as you're in huge demand with sessions and talks. How are you keeping?
I'm good, I'm good, Sophie, thank you.
Brilliant, brilliant. I have a few questions here if you don't mind answering. Yeah. So you work in Ireland's only hiking psychotherapy practice based in Dublin and Meath, which is called Hike Psych. Yeah. How did you get into this job? Did something inspire you?
Yeah, well, I suppose they happened in two different parts. The therapy I started having, I used to run two clothing boutiques which went under in the recession. Mm-hmm. So I suddenly found myself out of work and trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. Mm-hmm. And after a lot of careful consideration, I decided I wanted to be a therapist. Yeah, during the recession, I retrained and started working as a psychotherapist. And then in 2017, I got into hiking when a friend of mine asked me if I'd like to go on a girls' weekend to Scotland. And yeah. I thought we were going shopping for the weekend. But actually, as it turned out, we were climbing Ben Nevis.
Wow.
So I very quickly had to go and get myself into a hiking shop and get some boots and get sorted. So it was kind of after that I started considering putting the two together. I started a community group and went for kind of weekly walks with a group of women, group of mothers here in Stepside in Dublin. And it was really on those walks that I saw the benefits of talking while moving, that lovely rhythm and cadence, and the fact that people seem to build up trust at a much greater pace. And that kind of was where the idea was born.
Yeah, I guess that, therapy. It means you're stuck with a person in a room, you're sat down and you just talk. And it's, I feel like it's more intense than, you know, going for a walk, looking at the beautiful scenery.
Yeah.
And all of that relaxation while you're walking, it's a huge benefit.
It really is, yeah, especially for people with anxiety. If you have a very anxious, active mind, the act of walking gives your body something to do with the energy. You know, it takes it, some of it out of your head, and that can actually be really helpful in being able to access the thoughts that otherwise are so caught up in the spiraling, you know, that they that you can't get to them because there's so much happening. So you are using quite a lot of energy just to move and to focus and to, you know, look around and to, you know, mind your steps. So it clears a bit of space in the head for what's actually the problem, you know.
Yeah, and would you say that you'd get more out of it rather than, you know, being in a room talking? Do you think that people are definitely more open when they're on these walks? And
yeah, I really do. I mean, there's a lot of research behind it as well, not as much as there should be, because obviously nature is free, so people tend not to put research money into something that's available for free. You know, you can't sell it. The research that is there very much supports the idea that it builds a kind of a trusting relationship faster, that it reduces rumination, which is, you know, kind of the core of anxiety and a precursor to depression, and kind of levels you off. You know, if you walk into a therapy room and there's a, you know, someone sitting over there across the table with the tissues on it, you know, looking all professional and kind of reserved, it's a much more contrived environment than I'm meeting this person, we're here, we're side by side or shoulder to shoulder, and we're walking together, we're both getting rained on, we're both getting mucky. You know, it's much more level. It feels less intimidating.
Yeah. Brilliant. And talking about anxiety, I guess it's a big topic with young people nowadays. What would you say is the biggest problems us students face in secondary schools, especially, you know, students who currently face exams like the Leaving or Junior Cert?
Yeah, I mean, anxiety does seem to be something that is becoming more prevalent, especially in young people. And I certainly think COVID had a lot to do with that. Social disconnection is not good for us. We are meant to be around people. Of course, that came with a threat as well. You know, this invisible threat that was floating around that we didn't really know what to do with, you know. So that hasn't helped. But really, anxiety is, for students, you have to look at, where is the fear coming from? What is sparking that fear? And is that fear rational? Because, like, we're meant to feel anxiety. It's normal to feel anxious before you give a presentation or before, you know, before you do something scary. You know, you should feel anxious. That keeps you on your toes. It, you know, it gets your blood flowing. It gets you thinking clearly. You know, you react faster. So anxiety in and of itself is not an unhealthy thing. It needs to be used in the right way. And if you're becoming anxious about things that actually pose no threat, then it's really important to check that. So, you know, a lot of the time we would talk about a thing called catch it, check it, change it. So if you find yourself thinking anxious thoughts all the time, where did that come from? Like, let's catch it in the moment. Okay, I'm feeling really stressed now. What has started this? Where did this begin? You know, if you have an upcoming test or something, yeah, that's okay. That's like, you should feel a bit anxious about that. But if your thoughts about that are incredibly negative and not based on facts, if you are, I'm definitely going to fail, if, you know, it's going to go horribly, I'm going to fall on my way to the desk and everyone's going to laugh at me, you know, then you've got to check it. You go, hang on a minute now, how did I do in the last exam? You know, if you've always failed every exam, then yeah, okay, the evidence would suggest that possibly you're going to fail this one too, but chances are that's not the case. So why is your brain telling you that that is a risk factor when there's no evidence to support it? So you check it, you check the thought, catch it first, check it. And then if you realize through checking that actually there's nothing supporting that anxious thinking, then you try and change it. You go, okay, well, what do I know? You know, have I studied? Am I ready for this? Is everything in place that should make this go, not perfect, but okay, you know? And if it doesn't go okay, will I get through it? So that's how you start changing the thinking. You have to, anxiety can only live when there isn't facts to negate it. Yeah. So if you can check the evidence, kind of bringing your thoughts to trial, if you like,
yeah,
looking for the evidence. If you brought this thought to a judge, the judge would go, where's your evidence to support this? If you have no evidence, your brain will go, okay, you know, there's nothing backing this up. It's an irrational mm-hmm. thought. So, but catching it first is the most important thing, because if you don't realize that you're in a spiral, it will continue. It's like a snowball. It will just keep going. So you want to catch it as early as you can and then check whether it's a legitimate fear, whether there is a threat or there's not. And if there isn't, then work on changing that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting what you're saying. Thank you so much for that. So talking about stress mm-hmm. and the pressures of school, I think everyone can relate when, you know, when their upcoming test is yeah. about to, you know, arrive yeah. or they have their mocks or they have their junior yeah. cert to prepare for. They yeah. huge, they feel huge pressure and stress. Yeah. And, you know, they're feeling incredibly overwhelmed. What tips or advice would you give to those students?
Well, I mean, I suppose understanding your attention, the capacity of your attention, is really important. So you have to learn a lot. There's no way of making that easier. You know, that the task is huge. Really, the thing is to try and work within the best spaces that you can. So our attention span after 45 minutes basically disappears. Mm-hmm. So you work fine up to about 40 minutes, then from 40 to 45, it just falls off a cliff. Staying in studying past 45 minutes yeah. is pointless. It's really pointless. Mm-hmm. You are much better served going, okay, I've hit that limit. Nothing is really going to go in now. I'm going to get up and I'm going to leave. We're often very hesitant to do that. We think, if I just keep the head down and I just keep going, you know, it'll go in, but it won't go in. Your brain has reached capacity for that moment. So really, if you can get up and move and go for a walk, particularly mm-hmm. out in nature, because nature allows what's called soft attention. So it's a very healthy source of attention, which is much less jarring and negative than our kind of usual heavy attention.
And like, if you're feeling angry or stressed or overwhelmed yeah. or anything like that, do you have just even really simple techniques to help you?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be different for different things. If you're feeling anger, generally anything physical is really good, like have a punch bag, or, you know, go up to a mountain, throw a heavy rock, something that gives your body somewhere to put the energy that goes into anger. Mm-hmm. If it's something like anxiety or stress or worry, then breath work is like more powerful than virtually all medications that you can take for anxiety. So things like, you'll be able to look all these up online, but like four square breathing or physiological sighs, all mm-hmm. of those things will help you take the anxiety down, tell your brain, tell your body that it is actually safe, that there is no threat.
Mm-hmm.
They're incredibly powerful, but we have to remember to do them. Most people know that, you know, breath work is important, or that, you know, there's loads of breathing exercises. Very few of us actually do it. So, you know, it's about making it a priority and looking at it as if, you know, it's been written on a prescription from a doctor and someone has said, this is what you need to do when you feel this way. Mm-hmm. And doing that, you know, it does have to be a kind of a daily practice, mm-hmm. you know, for it to really be beneficial. A lot of the time we leave it to the very last second. And at that point, sometimes we've gone too far into it mm-hmm. to pull ourselves back. So, yeah, lots of daily small things will help a lot more than throwing a load of stuff at a crisis.
Thank you so much, Cara. How can we find you on social media? Are you on Instagram or Facebook?
I'm on Instagram. Yeah, that's probably the main place to find me. So it's at hikesite.ie on Instagram, and my website is hikesite.ie as well.
Great. Cara, you've been great. Thank you so, so much for your time. Hopefully we'll hear again from you soon.
It was lovely to talk to you, Sophie. Thank you.
Hello everyone, my name is Anya and welcome to TY Takeover on LMFM. And now we have some tips for students who may be suffering mentally. Talk to friends and family. If you have concerns, stresses or worries, sharing these problems or issues is one of the most effective ways to calm your nervous system. As they say, a problem shared is a problem solved. Stay active. Regular exercise or activity can have a major impact on your mental and emotional health, relieve stress, improve memory and help you sleep better. Exercise releases endorphins in your body, which helps to improve your mood. Don't skimp on sleep. sleep is our body and mind's best way to recharge and rejuvenate. To get a better quality sleep, reduce time on devices such as smartphones and tablets. Consider reading or listening to music before bed. Quiet your mind. Try meditating / mindfulness. Relaxation exercises can improve your state of mind and outlook on life. In fact, research shows that meditation may help you feel calm and enhance the effect of therapy. Get help when you need it. Seeking help is a sign of strength, not a weakness, and it's important to remember that treatment is effective. People who get appropriate care can recover from mental illnesses.
Now we have a WhatsApp voice note request in for a song.
Hi Sophie, can you play Freed From Desire by Gala?
No problem, Patrick. Here's Gala, only on TY Takeover on LMFM. I am now joined by Connor and Ailish, two TY students from Bush Post Primary. Welcome the two of you. How are you feeling?
Oh, good, thanks. Thanks for letting us on this.
Now, Connor, we'll start with you. Would you like to say how your experience in school was like during the junior cert course, particularly during third year?
I would, actually. I actually didn't think it was that bad. You could knock it for its stress. You know, you can always talk about how the pressure, but I feel like it's necessary. You're going to have, sooner or later, most people are doing the leaving cert, so having something to prepare you for that in third year is pretty important, the structure and the time management skills. But that's just me. I feel like many people would disagree with that, but my opinion was it was grand, third year experience. If I was asked to do it again, I would, but probably financially compensated this time for the stress, because, you know, don't want to be going waking up that time early again. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good in general.
Now for the junior cert. Now, I remember how crazy it was for me, to be honest. Like, I had to study nearly every single day.
Oh, yeah.
Barely had time to meet up with friends, and on top of that, I had loads of curricular activities to attend to.
But yeah, like, you did, and I feel like you can't have it all easy. At some point in your life, there's going to be a time where you're restricted, whether that be, as you said, with the social elements of it, or even the mental health of studying every night. But I think if you genuinely put the work in, it'll pay off. You study, you put your head down, and seeing them results not only shows on the paper, but it shows in you. You'll be proud of yourself after doing all that, after sacrificing the time. But at the end of the day, it comes down to if you value your social status more than your junior cert results, that's going to show. But it really is up to you. I think it's worth getting the head down and studying. Some people might disagree and say it's a waste of time, as many do. But honestly, that's up to your interpretation. Support was there for whoever needed it. I feel like if you were struggling, whether it be mental health, it be academic, you could always ask for it. That might be just my school in general, but I feel like it probably a universal thing. But to be taught, you'd have to be real, I wasn't getting up at like 7 every morning. It wasn't voluntarily going to school now. You know, it was very hard to get to bed every single morning, as everyone else can say.
Of course,
but, you know, coming into school, there was very few days where I come in there and I was like, I'm dreading this or that. You just kind of get in, and it became a system after a while. It became your life. It was what it was. And I feel like it's important to mention that.
About the short courses in school, what did you think about them, such as well-being? I mean, were they helpful to you in any way?
Listen, well-being, 90% of the time I was sitting in the back of the class thinking what I was making for food later. You know, honestly, there's very few times where I was sitting there going, you know what, this is a really interesting thing. But it's down to whoever you are. I feel like it's an important subject to have. I mean, I did find well-being helpful. Some things discussed about how you can always reach out to someone if you need it. That's important for some people to hear, because having that voice in the background saying you need help, it can help people. So I think it's good.
Now, Ailish, over to you. How did you find preparing for the junior cert?
Junior cert, I won't lie, like, I didn't go mad studying. Like, I don't think I was, like, I was one of the people that put in, like, the effort, like, the last 2 weeks, maybe. Like, didn't put a lot of stress in it. Like, and I know I probably should have put in a lot more work than I did. But yeah, I didn't put a lot of stress.
That's fair. But there's a fine line between too much homework. Like, I actually remember,
yeah,
because I remember actually I started third year in higher level maths. I certainly didn't finish the year in higher level maths now. But I remember the first few weeks, the day I decided that I was getting out of that class was when I went to go and write the homework in my homework diary, and it didn't fit on the line. I generally couldn't fit the amount of questions, the amount of pages I was to do. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, what's that teaching me? What's 2.5 pages of maths homework really teaching me? It's wasting my time. After a couple of questions, I've grasped the concept. Why must I prove this another 17 times? Mm-hmm. I get the thing.
Now, this statement, people who get better grades in school will be successful in life.
Ooh.
What do you think of that now?
You know what? Like, I don't think grades are going to define you, but I think it shows your worth ethic. Like, people are going in the whole time saying, oh, this isn't going to affect me in my life. This, like, I think that just says a lot about you as a person. I think, like, a lot, if you look at very successful people, like, they didn't finish school. But I think a lot of people go home and say to their parents, oh, look, he didn't finish school, so why am I in school?
Yeah, it's more your work ethic and showing that you can actually, you know, you've been given a task to do a good in a subject and you've done it. An employer's going to look at that and go, yeah, that's useful. But I'm not saying that is the only defining trait that can get you a job. There is plenty other things.
I think it just shows how you're able to, like, put your head down and work more so then it defines how smart you are. Because, like, obviously, like, you have different skills, but, like, if one of them skills is because they don't give you a lot of work, or you hate one teacher because they're strict.
Because they're trying to help you.
And then, like, it's just a lot of people's personal opinion. Like, we get graded on our act and performance. They don't personally grade us on how they like us as a student.
Yeah, I don't need to be best friends with this man to do well in his class. You know, there's been plenty of examples in history, not in history, but in the history where I haven't liked somebody. Yeah. I haven't liked a teacher. I've done well. But, yeah, I'm sure everyone listening can say they went to a class saying that, like, I cannot deal with this teacher at this time. Like, this teacher, I can't do this. Because I know I had Carrie Matz first thing on a Thursday morning last year. Now, he was a good teacher. But that class in general, not sure I came out there with any more brain cells than I did when I started. At the end of the day, it really is a biased opinion.
We just want to say a huge thank you to all the listeners who tuned in to TY Takeover on LMFM. Hey,
LMFM. This is the TY Takeover on LMFM. Coming up in the programme, we'll be discussing young people in sport and mental health, as well as how you can use sports psychology to bring your performance to the next level.
We've got some excellent guests lined up. Ex-League of Ireland footballer John Morgan talks to us about what the FAI can do for young people.
Local GAA coach Tom Cooney gives an insight into underage coaching, and psychology students gives some tips and tricks to up your mental game.
Our final guest is Sue from the Thrive Project, a mental fitness group dedicated to helping people and athletes reach their full potential. I'm Derry and this is the TY Takeover.
Next, we'll be talking to ex-League of Ireland captain John Morgan about the highs and lows of professional football.
Well, John, thank you for taking time out to speak with us. We are all transitioning your students from Loud and Mead, and we can't wait to ask you some questions.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, and thanks for having me come in and chat to you. I'm looking forward to it.
What's your sporting background? How did you get into football?
So I would have initially started when I was probably about 5 or 6, living in Swords at the time, so I would have done mini-league tournaments and blitzes in River Valley, and that's actually where my first club was. Schoolboy career was with River Valley Rangers and St. Kevin's Boys. And then I obviously represented my school. And then I would have progressed into college. I did a PLC course. And from there, I went away to America for a year. When I came home then, I just played senior football in the Leinster Senior League. So I would have had numerous clubs between Eastmead United, Cardiff, Trinity Donegal, Boyne Rovers locally here. Then I progressed into the League of Ireland with Wexford FC. I had 2 seasons with Athlone. And now I'm currently back in Drogheda with Boyne Rovers.
So, as a young athlete, was there any coach or sports person that inspired you to pursue a career in football?
Yeah, of course. Like every young lad, probably yourselves as well, you look at your favourite footballers and you think you want to be a footballer. That's your main goal in life. And as you get older, you realise that the football is an industry in terms of there's many different strands to it. My dad was always heavily involved with me, whether he was coaching or driving me up and down the country, so he'd have been my main influence in football. But then throughout my career, I've played under coaches that have guided me and given me good advice in terms of how to progress my career, the different avenues, the different educational streams and stuff like that. So there's too many. I don't think there's enough people that I could have leaned on growing up, even in school, teachers in terms of guidance counsellors. They would have given me more than enough information. And then it's just about, as you grow older, you mature, you understand what you want to do in life. And that can take time. But even outside of the sport, you look at people in different sports. You look at Katie Taylor now, what she's doing. So again, there's different ways you can get influences in sport, not just your own. That answers your question.
How did your guidance counsellor react when he told you you're going to be a professional footballer?
Well, I think when I was in school, I think there was 120 lads, so I was in an all-boys school, and I think 120 of us all wanted to be professional footballers. There was only 3 that actually became professional football. It's about maturing your education, or your sport can get you a really good education. So I would have had 2 scholarships at my time. I went to America, and when I came home, I went back to Carlo, and I would have got a sporting scholarship then as a mature student. So I kind of used my sporting ability to find my path in my educational stream as well. So again, if I wasn't going to be a professional footballer, what can I use football to gain in life? And that was my education and obviously my career now.
Obviously, as a kid, there's a lot going on in your life. So how did you cope with balancing schoolwork and exams with training and competition?
Yeah, it's difficult. It was very difficult for me. And it's probably more difficult for players now. I would have coached in the League of Ireland for the last couple of years. And young lads are coming in at 14, 15, 16 and they're training nearly 3-4 nights a week and then they're playing up and down the country. So they're obviously doing a lot more than I would have done at the time. But for me, I used to get a bus from Julianstown to Swords every day, which took an hour. And it's the same going home. So I would have got a lot of my homework done on the way home from school, or if I needed to catch up on things, I did it on the way. Because after school, if I was still training in Dublin, I was hanging around Dublin for 2 hours. Maybe I'd go to my uncle's for dinner, or I'd stay in the school, try and get me work done there. Because I knew then when I was training and then driving home, it would have been a lot harder to do. Again, I don't think there's any right way of going about. I think it's whatever spare time that you have, you need to set aside for your schoolwork, because it's vitally important. You can be the best player in the world, but if you don't have an education to back it up, the sporting career will eventually end. But if you don't use that to gain something else in life, then you're going to probably go back to square one. So it's all about balance for me, yeah.
What do you think was the highest point in your career?
Oh, the highest? Oh, wow. Don't know, there's been a few. Obviously, I would have captained Athlone in the League of Ireland. That would have been a proud moment for me. And I've been lucky to be part of successful teams all through my career, in schoolboys, representative teams, and in college. I had a cup final in college where I scored the winner in a 1-0 final, and my family were there to support me. So that was one of the biggest highlights. But for me, I won a league title here with Boyne Rovers. I think it was 2016. My dad was the manager of the team, and on the team was two of my brothers as well. So that felt very good. A lot of the team are really close friends of mine as well. So that probably would be the standout for me.
So kind of this whole show is kind of dedicated towards pressure in sport. So what kind of would you consider to be the lowest point in your career? And then how did you go on to deal with it to end up where you are now?
I think sports, particularly at the highest level, there's a lot more low points in it than high points. I think that's why people celebrate the wins as much as they do. For me, the lowest points, like, I've been released from teams and stuff like that, and cut from squads, which is devastating, particularly when you're 15, 16 and you miss out on big competitions. But for me, I think injuries are the lowest points. I would have ruptured my knee ligaments when I was 19 years of age, and I missed about 7 months of football. And you don't go to the training anymore because it's outdoors, it's raining, it can be cold. So you're just in isolated doing rehab, and it can be quite lonely. You get down on yourself. So at the time, I would have worked with a sports psychologist, and just doing little goal setting and setting goals for the recovery process itself. So I had something else to focus on rather than just being away from the team environment. So definitely injuries for me is always the lowest point, but it's then about building that mental capacity of setting yourself, keeping yourself occupied. For me, it was working with the sports psychologist. And then from that, I now read a lot. I do a daily diary where I actually physically write every evening in bed. I write about my day and stuff. So just little things that I've adapted over the years. But again, there's so many different avenues you can go down and how to do that. But yeah, for me, injuries low point, they always have been.
So speaking of low points, do you think mental wellness is an important factor in any athlete's performance, especially during these low points?
Definitely. I think the mental aspect could be the most important. Because the technical aspect and the tactical and the physical we can work on, and you can see it physically in kids and senior players. You can look at videos. But the mental capacity is hidden. You can't see what's going on in a person's mind. But when you have someone like a psychologist or a sports psychologist, or you're setting yourself goals, you can see it then in confidence in players. And for me, I think that's where the awareness in games and decision-making, people are a lot calmer. I found it as I grew older. When I was young, I was quite emotional when I played. I'd be reactive to things. Whereas as I grew older, I learned to be a lot more level-headed and I could see the game a lot clearer. So I think the maturer kids are as they come into senior football helps them a lot more. And I think that it's more evident when you see it on TV now. They talk about that a lot more. And there's a lot more podcasts being done on it, a lot more sports stars coming out and talking about how the way they feel and stuff. So yeah, I think it's by far the most important, in my opinion anyway.
Obviously, as a footballer, you play in a lot of matches and some really big matches. Did you have any mental tips or tricks that you would have used to prepare, such as mindfulness, visualization, breathing, anything?
Yeah, yeah. Visualization, I would have done a lot the night before when I was getting into bed. I used to always think about the goals I want to score or the movements that I'm going to make and how to lose defenders and stuff like that. In terms of the match day prep, I've always been in a specific routine. So I'd have my bag set the night before. My socks would be folded the same way. My shin pads would be clean. I'd always put my, I wouldn't be superstitious, but I'd like to keep, I put my right boots on before I put my left boots, little things like that. But I'd always have music playing. I'd have different genres of music depending on how I felt when I got up. My meals would always be in the same time. So for me, it was just about the routine of it. And then when I'm at the ground, just trying to keep my heart rate down, try not to think about the game anymore. Talk to people about, you know, their dogs, what they're doing on the weekend or anything like that. Just constantly keep yourself chilled out. And then when you get into the warm-up, then it's when you start refocusing then completely on the game. But after the game is finished, when it was our draw, it's about finding that chill zone again, trying to switch off again. And then when you come back into training on the Monday or the Tuesday, then it's refocus time.
So for our last question, you talked there about listening to music before a game. Is there any particular song that gets you like hyped up and ready to go?
Like I was saying, it comes down to the type of mood I'm in when I get out of bed. Oasis would have been my favourite band growing up. So anything, I just put shuffle on and I let it roll. But the Kings of Leon would be another one. But then I could go to Rick Ross. There's been times where I listen to Taylor Swift, Carmen. Right? So it's one of them things. Sometimes I have a playlist, I let it shuffle. I might skip a song now and then, but I don't think there's any one specific song that I'd go to. It would be more a genre. Well,
thanks very much.
No problem. Best of luck.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Project.
That was ex-League of Ireland captain John Morgan on the TY Takeover. I say I'm too late. Next, we'll be talking to local GAA coach Tom Cooney about what mental techniques he uses to encourage and support his team.
Can you hear me there?
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, yeah. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good.
Firstly, just start off like very vague. So why did you become a GAA coach?
So I became involved in GAA through my children. When my eldest boy was 5 or 6 and started playing for the local village team, I went along to support him. And then realised that there was nobody available to help with the coaching. Because I'd come from a GAA background, I decided to help out. Then as I became more involved, I wanted to get better at it. So I took my coaching badges and also, like, I'm a lecturer as a profession. So my teaching background kind of would have influenced my approach to coaching as well. So overall, I'm an accidental coach rather than being somebody whose life ambition was to become a coach or to coach at a high level.
Yeah. So when you're coaching, do you feel there's a lot of pressure on young people in underage sport?
Yes, but not necessarily for everyone. I think the pressure gets greater as you become older, and also becomes much greater as you move up to higher levels. So once you get into elite levels of sport, then the pressure certainly becomes much greater. I look at young lads who are on, you say, county academies, and I look at, you know, from a young age at 14, 15, 16, you know, they're doing weights, they're doing, you know, eating programs to bulk up they're doing recovery programs. And they're doing that because they want it, they want to succeed, they want to be on the county team, but it's also putting far greater pressure on them. The other thing I would say about the pressure on young people is that it's partly coming from the coaches as well. Coaches are much better trained these days than they used to be, and they're much better prepared for training sessions. But that also puts higher levels of expectation on the coaches. Those higher levels of expectation come from the players themselves, who are demanding more of coaches. And it also comes from the parents, who are demanding more of the coaches. And indeed, the coaches are demanding more of themselves. So because they're better trained, it means that there's higher expectations upon them. And higher expectations ultimately means winning trophies.
Yeah, so hi Tom, I'm up for the next question.
What age do you think winning games and trophies, etc., should become important? Obviously, winning and losing is a big part of sport, but at what sort of an underage level should that become the be-all and end-all?
Winning of trophies as the ultimate ambition, in my view, should become only a priority at around 16, 17 years of age. In GAA terms, I would say at minor level. At minor level, you're about to enter into adulthood in terms of GAA, and therefore, you've got to be real. You've got to understand that winning and losing is important. You've got to understand how to win and lose. You've got to understand the issues around not being picked to play and how do you respond to that. But I would say up to that point, ambition of the coach should be to develop good young people in terms of their values, to develop their skill sets, to appreciate that not everyone develops at the same rate, and somebody who may be very good at under 12, may not be as good at under 16 or under 17. What you don't want to do along the journey is lose players because they feel they're not being included. And you should ensure that everyone feels part of the squad, feels that they're being given an opportunity, feels that they're learning, feel that they're enjoying what they're doing. But by the time you get to minor, winning is important.
And do you think mental well-being is an important aspect of sport, especially in underage levels?
I think it's hugely important. I think it's hugely important. First of all, I think that you get to learn about different qualities about yourself and also how you interact with other people. I think as a coach, your first priority must be around player welfare and player well-being and obviously player development, right? So you're developing them in terms of their skill sets, but also you're developing them in terms of growing up as young adults and the values and then the value systems that you give to them. We kind of have a thing where we talk about a player whisperer. And by that, we mean one of the coaches in a training session having a quiet word with a player. So just saying, look, are you working on your left foot? Are you working on your fitness? I noticed in the game last week that you weren't getting tight enough with the forward. What do you think you could have done to manage that situation better? And in those player whisperer moments, you get an opportunity to work with players one-on-one in a quiet way where you're being positive, you're teasing out areas for development with them, but ultimately you're allowing them to take charge of their own welfare, their own development, and that's really important. In addition to that, I would say it's an opportunity for young people to learn how to respond to adversity. So, for example, one of my sons got dropped off rugby team a couple of years back, and in the car on the way home, he was hugely disappointed. I said to him, you've got three options here, okay? Option one is you quit the team because you feel you've been hard done by and you got dropped and you felt it shouldn't have happened. Option two is you accept the decision and you sit on the bench for the rest of the year. Or option three is you respond to that challenge, okay, where you've been dropped. You talk to the coaches about why you were dropped, what areas you need to develop. You work on those areas for development, and you work your way back into the team. I'm happy to report in that situation, he took option three, responded to the challenge, and got back into the team. But not everyone responds in that way. But that's part of learning about life. So, well-being is hugely important.
Definitely. And how things, Tom? I'm James now. And the question I kind of want to ask you here is, like, I know that kind of with the whisper system and stuff like that, you have systems of dealing with mental health, but do you have any other ways?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Of dealing with this alongside players that maybe you could share with us?
The first thing I would say is that in any team I've been involved in, we clearly state that player welfare, player development, you know, is our priority. Okay, so we make that number one. We don't talk about winning trophies as number one. Do we want to win? Do we go to every match to win? Absolutely, we go to every match to win. But every player knows that their welfare, their personal development is our utmost priority. And should we have a choice between, you know, a player being unwell, being injured, and that influencing the game, then, you know, we won't take that risk. We won't put a player on the pitch if we think it's, you know, it's not in their best interest. Player welfare first. So I think that's really important, because once people know that, parents are happier, but the players themselves, okay, know that they can come talk to you and say, look, I'm struggling here. What can you do? You know, what can you do to help?
Hiya, Tom. Cormac here now. And last question. Who do you think will win the All-Ireland?
Well, having watched Dublin and Louth recently, I don't think either of those will win. But I do think it's a very open Leinster Championship, and I do think that Louth have a great chance of winning the Leinster Championship, given they've had a, you know, very good league campaign. I think it's quite open this year. I'd like to see Mayo win the All-Ireland. That would be my preferred option. I think they deserve it, having been so close for so often. But I think the answer is Kerry. They would be my favourites to win the All-Ireland this year, because I think they've just taken the league handy. They've got a superb team. They've got superb coach and Jack O'Connor. They would be my pick to win the All-Ireland again this year.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks a million for coming on.
No problem. Hope that's been helpful to you and your colleagues there doing the interview. Great questions. I really enjoyed them, actually. So the best wishes to you and your colleagues.
Cheers. Thanks.
Cheers, Derry. Thank you. Bye-bye.
That was St. Michael's GAA coach Tom Cooney talking to the TY Takeover on LMFM.
You are listening to LMFM's TY Takeover, and this is Whenever, Wherever by Shakira. Lucky you were born that far
away, so we. Coming up in the programme, we'll be discussing young people in sport and mental health, as well as how you can use sports psychology to bring your performance to the next level. We've got some excellent guests lined up.
And Luke McNally, champion defender for Coventry City, tells us about the pressures of moving to England and at a young age.
LMFM. You're listening to LMFM, the TY Takeover, and we're here with Luke McNally, Coventry City defender.
Thanks for having me on anyway.
No, yeah, thanks for coming on.
Hi Luke, how's it going?
Hi Ryan, how are you?
Good. Right, so we'll get started. What is your sport and background? What drew you into football?
Probably just, it's the going thing, isn't it? When you're younger and out in school, it was always playing football and that in Enfield. So, yeah, I always just kind of played football as I was growing up and played GAA with Nafina and then soccer with the Celtic. So, kind of played both of them all the way through, playing like a bit of athletics as well and just the little different things as a kid, not taking it too serious. So, yeah, I just got interested in all different sports and probably stuck with the football more so at Enfield. And
and at what point did you decide, you know, this is what you wanted to do for a living?
I probably always wanted to, but it's not always realistic, as you know. Like, there's so many people that have dreams of playing football or whatever it is they want to do, but it's not always straightforward. But I always kind of stuck at it, like even when I wasn't really probably expected to get too far, I always kind of stuck at it. And
you mentioned you played football and Gaelic football. Do you think, was there any pressure on you between picking the sports? Would you have any tips for young athletes who do have to choose between, say, two sports?
It's a tough one. I always just enjoy playing both, and I would have played both all the way till about 16, I would say. And so I got to a stage where I was going up to Dublin to play with Patrick, up to Drogheda to play with Drogheda. So it was getting to a stage where I couldn't do both. As you get more serious, and then there just comes a point where you got to put all your eggs in one basket. And from a sport perspective, and I went with the football, and yeah, I still miss the Gaelic. I'd love to go back one day, but yeah, we'll see what happens there.
What was your proudest moment as an athlete?
I have to say, I've had a lot of good days, to be fair, like progression through clubs and that. I didn't manage to win any cups or leagues yet, really. I missed out on winning the playoffs with Drada, missed out in the playoffs with Oxford. So from a team's perspective, not many, but definitely proud probably to go from to make some sort of a career in England is probably my proudest thing. As you say, a lot of people move over from the League of Ireland and it doesn't quite work out for them, but luckily for me, I done well at Oxford and then moved on to Burnley then after that. So I'd say that's probably my proudest thing, is that I went over to, I guess, away from home on my own and gave it a good crack and made something of it, I suppose. So that's probably mine.
Yeah, so the last question we have is, do you have any mental tips to prepare before games? Just anything that you do to get you in the game, in the mood for the game?
I don't know. I suppose as you get older, you realise what works for you and what doesn't. I like to visualise, actually, funny enough, and there won't be too many footballers that will admit that. But it's something I did do. I started working with a psychologist when I came to England, and visualising was actually quite a strong part of it. So it's just basically when a couple of days before the game, you're picturing like scenarios coming off, and when you're practicing then in your head, when you get onto the pitch, it doesn't seem alien to you. So that's probably one I do. But trying to stay relaxed is the main thing, I think, is there's no point in hyping yourself up in the car before or on the bus on the way too much, because you get to the dressing room and it's chilled out then, do you know what I mean? You're only hyping yourself up. So just when you're going out to warm up, make sure you're on it then and go from there, really.
Well, that's all the questions we have. Hopefully we'll see you in a Coventry shirt next year again. Thanks for coming on. Obviously, it means a lot to us.
Yeah, no problem. Cheers. Thanks for having me on. Anyway.
Hopefully we'll see you in a playoff final in a few months' time.
Please God. Thanks very much.
Right, thanks again, Luke.
Keep up to date with us on Twitter. At LMFM Radio.
This is the chart check-in on the TY Takeover on LMFM with me, Emily. Chart check-in. So at number 5, we have Kill Bill by SZA. Number 4, Ceilings by Lizzie McAlpine. Number 3, Boys a Liar Part 2 with Pink Panthers and Ice Spice. Number 2 is Flowers by Miley Cyrus. And number 1, of course, is Miracle with Calvin Harris and Ellie Goulding. That was the top 5 songs in Ireland on the chart check-in with Emily. Chart check-in on LMFM.
Our final guest is Sue from the Thrive Project, a mental fitness group dedicated to helping people and athletes reach their full potential. You're listening to the TY Takeover on LMFM. So we'll start with the first question. What is the Thrive Project?
Hello, everybody. Thanks very much for having me today. It's an absolute pleasure and an honour to be here talking to you today. So Thrive Project is a small business that I set up delivering personal development training to teens and adults. I specialise in mental fitness programmes to teens, which I teach to sports clubs, youth clubs and schools. I also work as a life coach and an EFT practitioner, where I see clients on a one-to-one basis. And I deliver workshops and self-care projects to adults as well, through parent groups and women groups and men groups.
So what kind of benefits have you found from people taking your course?
So the benefits that I found, the feedback that I get, I do evaluations after every course, and the feedback that I get, especially around teen mental health, is there's an increase in confidence, an increase in awareness, self-awareness, an inner belief that they have the potential to move towards their goals and attain their goals. There's an increase in resilience and a huge increase in their self-awareness of what triggers them, how better to manage their stress and anxiety. Yeah, a big, huge difference in themselves.
And do you find that sport is like a good platform for kind of getting these messages across?
Absolutely, yeah. I find working with teens in sports, especially around sports, in any kind of area where teens are, but specifically in sports, because they're in the sports field, they have an enthusiasm to learn more about themselves, and they have an enthusiasm to learn more about how their body works and their mind works and how it all incorporates together. And when we teach it through sports, it's like for the better example, it's like the carrot. So if you, you know, understand more about yourself and you understand how your mind works and you understand how the mind and the body works, because the body will always do what the mind tells it to do. And when teens understand that, especially in sports, they have an enthusiasm to work. So they have this kind of like idea that, you know, the more that they soak it up and we're able to teach more mental health tools and techniques for them to help manage stress and anxiety. And I find using it through sports is the carrot, because you're like, there's the end result. And we learn from here and we work our way up. So yeah, they're well on board
and
with it. Yeah.
When you go into, say, a school or a sports club, do you find in the beginning, do most teenagers have a relatively good level of mental fitness, or...
I find some of them do. I find some of them, they all know about mental health. They all know about mental fitness. Maybe not mental fitness, but they understand mental health. Some of them more so than others. And I find when we go into schools, into sports clubs, into youth clubs, and when we teach and we break it down, because what I do is I break it down into sections. And the young person learns through what we call transformational learning. So it's not just all lectures. It's not just all, this is what you have to do. You get involved. It's engaging. It's fun. There's activities. And the young people learn then how to incorporate it into their life. So it's teaching lots of different tips, tools, techniques for them to better manage their mental health, but then also their inner world and their outer world.
So if you had any tips just for teens on how they could improve their overall mental health, like what would it be?
Tips that I would say is it's awareness, it's self-awareness. It's all about self-awareness. It's about understanding how your mind works. It's understanding how that self-talk, you know, the self-talk, as I call it, the rabbit going around, the monkey going around on the bike. I think you see it in Homer Simpson where he's going around. It's catching that. And I think when you understand that monkey brain going around and around, and when you're aware that that's what's happening, then you can make changes. So it's being aware, it's self-awareness.
And how important do you think good mental health is to young people?
I think it's very important. I think it's extremely important. I think because of the development of your brain at this age group, and when you understand all about like how your mind and the body works together, and when you understand different tools and different techniques, and if you learn them now, the chances are when you're older, when you do come across challenges and you do come across, you know, events, you're better able to cope. You build resilience because you kind of like, oh, wait, hang on. Sue taught me a tool there. I can use my breath in order to calm myself down. You know, I can use this technique that will help me come back into the calm and response, because when we have stress and anxiety build up in us, we're in what we call the fight, flight, freeze response, which is the stress response. And we're unable to calm ourselves down. But when we learn the tools and techniques that will help us calm down, bring us back into a calm and response, we're then better able to cope with what life is thrown at us. And I think it's really important to teach young people now in this age group, because then later on they'll be able to go, hang on a minute, I have a tool for this.
That's all our questions.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lyndon. Oh, you're very welcome, guys.
Thanks again for
coming. You're very, very welcome, guys.
LMFM. Welcome to LMFM's TY Takeover. My name's Tyke. We will be controlling your radio for the next couple of hours. Our exciting interviews include LMFM's very own Michael Reid, local TD Jed Nash, and the Mayor of Drogheda, Michelle Hall, as well as voices of the local young people.
And I'm Aoife. Coming up, we're going to talk about what might happen in Drogheda's future. We have some great interviews and some class music.
And my name is Emily. For our next interview, we have the Mayor of Drogheda, Michelle Hall.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for coming to talk to us today. It's really good to have you here to ask some questions. Just going to start then. Do you think enough is being done to develop Drogheda at the minute?
Thank you for having me today. It's great to be here with you all.
do. I think enough has been done with Drogheda at the moment. I suppose there's a lot of things happening in Drogheda at the moment, actually. And while you mightn't see the end process of it yet, there is a lot of things in the pipeline, a lot of draft plans, a lot of applications being sent to government departments for funding. And we have a lot of housing and roadworks planned as well. So I think there's a lot being done that hopefully we'll see the end product in the next couple of years. I think it has probably been neglected that we needed a little bit more being done in Drogheda over the last 20 years. So the country has been in a better state of affairs, that there's a bit more money in the country. So there is a lot more money available for things that like our public infrastructure that mightn't have been there before. So, for example, we have our active travel measures. So there's going to be about €6 million worth of cycle lanes going into Drogheda. There is the Westgate Vision, which you might have heard of, which is looking at developing from George Street down to the river and looking to drive people to come into town. So there's a plan for that, and they're looking for planning application is going through soon. So then they can apply for more funding from the government to actually realise it. So there's a lot of exciting public realm things happening. Of course, we also have a lot of dereliction in the town. We do have a lot of homelessness, which is kind of like hidden from the public, really, I suppose. But there's a lot of people living in hotels and B&Bs. And hopefully with these new housing developments that are opening in the north side of Drogheda, that will help relieve a lot of the pressure in the town. And then there are plans by the government, and hopefully successive governments, to really look at our dereliction and our vacant sites, and all of those empty premises should be full of people living in them. So hopefully they will be developed as well.
So lots of very like important and exciting things coming up then.
There really is, yeah, a lot of work being done.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, thanks Emil for coming in. So that's great to hear that there's stuff going on, because you might not see it, you know, every day in your day-to-day when you're in town. So I was just wondering, how do you feel about young people's services, say, in facilities? Because I know for us young people, they're, like, we don't see a lot going on in the town. Mm-hmm. Like, there's stuff to do, say, in Fantasia, but that's quite far out of town. And it's, you know, there's a cost of money, of transport, where even though the bike lanes are coming in, that's great. So that's getting people out and active.
There is a lot of probably gaps there for young people to do things, especially free things, as you were saying. There can be things that can cost money that you can go to. And one thing that we do have in Drogheda is a lot of sports clubs. There's a wide variety of types of sports clubs, like going from basketball to water polo. I hear cricket now has been very popular, so there is. We have all of those facilities. But thing is, a lot of teenagers do drop off and they don't really participate in a lot of that. I mean, we have a skate park. It's a very small skate park. We're looking to, you know, have something better than that, maybe for young people. So I do understand. We're lucky, I suppose, in the last couple of years, we've had the Boomerang Cafe.
Yeah, and that's great. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, there really is. And even more so lately. And I know my son was at a gig at the weekend in Odd Molly's. So, you know, I think there's a lot of interest in music, and Drogheda would be quite an arty town. It always was, even when I was growing up. So you have like a lot of drama, music, dance. That is, you know, catering for a lot of people. But I think our outdoor spaces for young people need to be developed. So about 2 years ago, I put forward a motion for a play and recreation policy for County Loud. And that goes through then a special policy committee. So I'm on that special policy committee, and that will hopefully be start developing in autumn. And that's looking at a 10-year countywide plan for Loud, looking at play and recreation for all ages, not just for 0 to 12 or 0 to 18. We're actually looking at developing really nice play areas and recreational areas for all people. First of all, we're developing, again, a lot of it comes from policy. So again, these are things that maybe younger people don't, maybe you wouldn't be reading the newspapers or, you know, looking at Loud County Council website, but we're looking to develop different policies. At the moment, we have the Healthy Ireland for Loud policy that's been developed, and Corlin and Ogue, the young people's organisation, have been feeding into that through their consultation. We'll also have the local community and economic development policy development policy, and that's looking at how can we improve life for everybody in County Louth, and that will include young people as well. And it's really important that if you do see things like that, say on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, wherever you're on your social media, that you can also feed into those. Or if you have Cuerlain an Óg representatives in your school and they ask you, it's really, really important that young people give their voices and see what you want to do, because I can interpret what you might want to do, but it really is young people that want to do stuff. So yeah. I think one important thing is probably smart towns where you actually have free Wi-Fi kind of around everywhere. You know, a lot of places have had that for a long time. I was in Salou maybe 10 years ago and they had Wi-Fi all over Salou, like no matter where you went. Whereas in Drogheda, we only have in this little bench maybe that you can sit on and you get your free Wi-Fi, or you're going to your coffee shops and that. But what do you think that we need?
Well, I think the sports is brilliant because a lot of young people, like myself included, after COVID, mm-hmm. a lot of stuff wasn't happening.
Yeah.
And then you didn't have the motivation to go back. So hearing that there's a lot in town and getting involved is really good. Because, you know, sports is a really big part of young people's lives.
Yeah, and young teenager girls as well sometimes don't feel they want to participate. So there are programmes now with the Louth Sports Partnership looking at encouraging girls coming back into sports. And they have a girls' soccer league and it started off with 300 and I think now they have 1,500, I heard last week, on it. And then also I'm part of the Drogheda Cycling Group and we do, we've had two women-only cycle and teenage girls come to that as well. And when it's only girls at it and only women, more people come to it. So that's really important that we also make space for that.
So you've been saying there's a lot of stuff coming down the pipework. Mm-hmm. So as that is happening, do you think in the future Drogheda could be seen as a city rather than a town?
Absolutely, of course it will. I think it will be inevitable. The census will come out and we'll see what the actual figures are for Drogheda. But also with the Northern Cross Road opening up and all of that housing, we could have potentially another 20,000 people living in the north side of Drogheda. So then you're maybe looking at 70,000 people in one town. And of course, that meets the parameter of being a city. Already, I have a lot of people say that have moved in from other countries and they say to me, oh, the city of Drogheda. So they actually don't even see it as a town. They call it a city without even knowing whether it is a town or a city. And then with that, it is really important then that we have our own sort of management within Drogheda, being such a big town that we can have our offices and somebody looking specifically around Drogheda.
So like bringing back something similar to the Borough Council? Then.
Yeah, but that's what it would be like. So Waterford City Council would have their own, you know, planning section and housing section, etc. Same with Galway City Council. So I think that would be important, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be great to see if we, you know, if we're developing Drogheda in to be such a positive place to live in and to visit, that more businesses will come to Drogheda as well, and that we'd have more jobs in Drogheda for young people in the future, which I think is really important, that we don't have to commute to Dublin, we don't have to commute elsewhere for our jobs. Those things affect our social lives. Affects the state of the roads because we've got so many cars on the road constantly. It actually causes such a wide variety of difficulties, so it does. But we're constantly promoting Drogheda, and County Louth, I have to say in fairness, are constantly promoting Drogheda as a place that's attractive to live in and for businesses to come and invest in as well. Is there anything else that you think you would like to see or me bring back to the council? As I say, we have Cuerlain and Óg who do come and represent to us in Drogheda, and then in Dundalk as well at our council meetings.
I think what you've been doing is really good, particularly promoting jobs, because I know a lot of people struggle, particularly at our age, to find somewhere to work, like part-time jobs, or a lot of places will be like, oh, you have to be 18.
Yeah, and we have to remember we're also very close to Dublin Airport, so there can be jobs in Dublin Airport for young people as well. So we can look at, and we have great public transport links. We have the buses, the trains. You know, we're in a great location, even if we do have to travel. Of course, though, we would prefer jobs in Drogheda, because I know as a mammy, having to drive people around to different jobs is a bit of a nightmare and a constant full-time job nearly in itself. So it is, but sure, it has to be done for the moment. But that's why we're looking at improving public transport as well. That's one thing I'm really passionate about, is that everybody should have access to cheap public transport and regular services from early morning to late in the evening, because that's the way we work, that's the way we go to college.
Just want to thank you again, Michelle, for coming in and answering our questions.
That was Michelle Hall, Mayor of Drogheda. Thanks a mil for coming in and doing this interview for the TY Takeover.
We've got a text in for a song request from Alicia, who wants to hear a bit of Oasis. So here's She's Electric on LMFM. She's
electric. For our next interview, we talked to Jed Nash, a local TD.
So, for kind of Drogheda area and like on the topic of leaders, so we were just wondering, like, how did you get into the whole politics thing, and what would you say to any of us if we wanted to try and start up?
I'd say go for it. Really, to answer your question, I was actually kind of involved and interested in politics and how things got done and how things could change. And I felt that the people who were on the council at the time didn't represent me. They were much older than I was. They were, you know, my parents' age, if not older.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You know, we have to have broad representation to represent all interests in our community. But there's nobody representing me. So I was 23 when I ran for the council first. I was only out of college a year or two. And I had that ambition to try and improve my area.
Yeah.
So I was 23, 1999, when I got elected first. So that's really what drove me first. I looked around that council chamber. I said, they don't really represent me. They're good people, but they don't represent me. And we built a bit of a movement locally where younger people got more engaged in politics and, you know, youth affairs and so on. And that's how it all started, I guess.
Yeah, very good, yeah, because that's kind of what we were talking about as well, you know, getting in. I mean, there's a lot of representation, but for younger people, you know, it's good to have a voice.
So going a bit deeper into Drogheda, do you think enough is being done now to help develop Drogheda?
I'll always be critical because I'm hugely ambitious for my town. I love this town. I'm from it. I was born and reared here. I think it has been the case that Drogheda hasn't been allowed to reach its full potential. Now, what I'd really like to see first is that the council would be restored in Drogheda. We had a council for many, many years, many, many generations, centuries indeed, running the affairs of the locality. And it's important that decisions are made as close to the area as possible. So I'd like to see the council restored because that's really important. So local people can make decisions that impact on our lives locally. I'm really ambitious for Drogheda. Some of the things that have happened recently are good. I mean, we've now finally got movement on what we call the Northern Port Access Route. And you'll say, well, what's so important about a road? The most important thing about that road is that it opens up the land for the development of 5,000 houses. The biggest issue I deal with every day is the housing problems that people have. And that's dominated, for example, debates in the Dáil over the last couple of weeks. And will continue to do so over the next period of time. I'll always say things need to improve more because I'm so passionate about this area.
So, Jed, as a local TD, do you think Drogheda could ever become a city rather than a town?
I do, and that's been an ambition of mine for a long, long time. And we've got a good group working to promote that idea, the Drogheda City Status Group. And when people ask me, well, should Drogheda just be the best big town in the country? I say, yeah, well, we are anyway. But city status gives us, I think, that bigger kind of emphasis. I think the scale of, well, Drogheda internationally would be a small city, still reaches what we call the OECD standards. So there's a kind of international definition of what a city should be. We meet all of those thresholds. Drogheda, remember, is much bigger than the government would accept because Drogheda extends not just into South County Louth, but into County Meath as well. So when the government is measuring the size of Drogheda, they need to take that into account, and they don't always do that. Remember as well that Drogheda is not just Drogheda. We service areas like in East Meath and South Louth, areas where people, you know, people would identify Drogheda as their town, where they get their services, where they go to school, where they work, where they use the hospital services, where they use council services and things like that. I go back to something I said earlier on. I think the first most important thing we should do on our way to city status is restore our council. And we actually brought in legislation a couple of years ago in the Labour Party to, you know, ask government to do that, to give power back to this area. That's the first step on the road to city status. Interesting thing is there's questionable definitions really in Irish law about how you actually achieve city status. That would have to be resolved too. But on our way to city status, I think city status is a state of mind, and we have to believe and feel like a city.
And then lastly, I have one last question. Do you think Drogheda has enough funding at the moment to help it become the city standard?
I don't. And government, all governments have to do a difficult job. But I think because, you know, we don't have our own council, because we don't look after our own affairs, then money probably isn't spread as fairly as it should be around the region, and that's why the true scale and of Drogheda needs to be properly understood by government. If we feel of, you know, the last couple of governments that they didn't give money, for example, to building that important road that we needed on the north side of Drogheda, that has actually ultimately been funded by developers who are going to do well out of the building of houses. One way or the other, that road's getting built. But I think that emphasises the kind of lack of government interest in some ways in actually moving Drogheda to the point where we needed to be. One good thing though did happen over the last couple of years, and it's something that I have been looking to get done for many, many years now. The IDA, our Industrial Development Authority, that brings foreign direct investment into Drogheda or into Ireland, you know, good jobs in big international corporations. Drogheda's been very underrepresented in terms of foreign direct investment for years. One of the things I've been campaigning for years is the building of what they call advanced units. So buildings where companies coming from, you know, the US or Europe or anywhere else that wants to invest there and can actually come here into a building that's ready-made for them. So that's going to be happening over the next couple of years. It's really good news for Drogheda, because what we want is to get people out of their cars and out of the buses and trains, working in Drogheda, working in their own communities, because it's good for them and it's good for their families.
Yeah, just want to thank you for coming in, Jed, and spending time with us to talk about this matter.
Thank you very much, Tig, and thank you. Thanks, everybody. It's been a really great experience. Yep. The very best of luck.
Thank you.
Thanks so much to Jed and Ash for coming in and talking to us today.
Now here's some more great music on LMFM.
Up next is LMFM's very own Michael Reid. How are you, Michael?
I'm good, Tig. How are you?
I'm good. So we're going to ask you a few questions on Drogheda and how you want to see it in the future. So First off, do you think enough is being done to develop Drogheda at the moment?
Yeah, well, quite a lot is being done and there's a lot of plans in place. I think probably, like the other people you've spoken to, I'd agree that more could be done and I'm sure in time a lot will be done. Obviously, the derelict buildings in the town is a big problem, and that's something that should be tackled quicker.
Do you think Drogheda will ever become a city as it grows and develops?
I think in time it will, yeah. Yeah. I think the population is growing all the time, and with the Northern Cross route, an awful lot of people are going to move in along that route, and that'll be very exciting if 20,000 people move in and add to the existing 40,000. So, yeah, quite possibly.
And how do you feel about the facilities? Do you think there's enough around the town? Are you happy with it? Or
for young people or for old people?
Just anything in general, really. Yeah.
Well,
or, you know, transport and all.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's probably about 40 years since I was a teenager, so that's a long time ago. But my big idea for Drogheda is one that everybody always laughs at, and what I would do is I'd put a roof over West Street, a Perspex roof over West Street, and you'd advertise it then as the street it never rains in.
Yeah.
And I think then I'd have lots of hangout places in the street for young people, and maybe you could have things available to do in those places, and let's say table tennis tables or something like that, and you could have maybe a charge. You ask €10 for the bats, but you get the €10 back when you gave back the bats and that sort of thing. Maybe you could have concerts, but I think really that it should be up to young people to decide, because I'm too old to know what it is you want. But I think something like that would work for young people and for old people and so on. And I think that instead of talking down to young people, that young people should be telling the decision makers what they want. For example, like when I was 15, I had my own radio program, and I was thinking about that because of what yous are doing. And I thought, why don't yous have your own radio program all of the time? Everybody is very excited about what yous are doing now. And maybe one of you should go to the management and say, we'd like our own radio program all of the time on LMFM and have a podcast. And you could work with the schools, and you decide the topics, you decide the issues, you decide if you're going to have music on it or if you're going to be talking about politics or dance or art or whatever it is. Because if it's about young people, there's no point in asking old people about it. Young people know what they want. You're all very intelligent, articulate people yourself. Well, there's a lot of schools and a lot of young people across Louth and Meath, I think, who'd probably be interested in something like that. But again, I can't claim I know, because I'm too old to have an opinion. It's just my thoughts.
And do you think the town has changed a lot, like, over the years?
Yeah, well, it has. It's changed. I came to Drogheda 20 years ago, and then West Street used to be very busy. It's not as busy as it was. It died off when they made the footpath bigger, but a lot of the shopping and that has moved out to the retail park, so yeah. It's been a lot of change like that.
And what do you think of the just overall cleanliness of the town? Like, do you think the council is doing a good enough job of trying to keep the place clean, or do you think
the centre of the town is good? Once you move outside of the centre, it's terrible because there's no cleaning done, and the biggest problem of all is dog owners not cleaning up after the dogs.
Yeah. There needs to be more dog bins or something like that, or more of a fine on being caught dog fouling or something like
that. Exactly, yeah. That's what I would think as well.
Thank you, Michael. More upcoming after the ad break.
Finish the lyric from TY Takeover LMFM.
This is the TY Takeover on LMFM, and this is Finish the Lyric.
This means that we're all going to have to take a turn guessing what's the next lyrics coming in the song.
And now I beg to see you dance just one more time. So I say,
dance for me, dance for me, dance for me. Uh-oh. You just come on over, Valerie. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm blinded by the lights.
Yeah. You and me.
Coming in the air tonight.
As it was. And I
will always love you.
Here is extraordinaire producer Brian Fairley singing for us today.
Garden gate, there's not much time left today.
Highway. I'm going to do it all night long.
Yeah!
Good. You did well. Thanks. This is the big boss of LMFM, Eamon Doyle, singing for us here on LMFM's TY Takeover.
Hurry, boy, it's waiting there for you.
Finish the lyric from TY Takeover LMFM.
Thanks to all listeners for tuning in to the TY Takeover on LMFM.
This programme was brought to you by Learning Waves and the Broadcast Authority of Ireland.
TY Media Week, brought to you by Learning Waves, the BAI and LMFM.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.